This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Mark Kermode, good afternoon.
Just don't let me do the cricket.
Trust me, we won't.
No.
Now, so we've got reviews coming up for Beer Fest and Driving Lessons, Little Miss Sunshine, Pulse, Right at Your Door, all movies that are out this week, and also Snowcake, and we've been joined by the director, Mark Evans. Hello, sir.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks for being patient. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks.
And do you get nervous on days like this?
Well, I had a bit of a rough ride with some of the reviews this morning. It seems to be a sort of one of those days when it's split right up the middle. So I'm still sort of digesting all that and looking at the weather and hoping for a bit of rain, actually.
Yeah,
it opens
well,
tonight.
I can tell you that it's not coming.
I know.
So the rain is certainly not coming. It's going to be a very sunny weekend. So the reviewers, you got them all, did you? Got a copy of every single paper?
I went to my local shop and bought them all and sat there reading them. Yes, I did.
That's never a constructive way to spend any time.
I'm a Welsh
it,
masochist, that's why.
So the people who liked it were saying what?
I tell you what it is. I think there's a sort of the film's got something that you have to overcome, and that is Sigourney Weaver is playing an autistic character. You either go, oh, come on, Sigourney, give us your autistic character and we don't believe you because you're Sigourney Weaver, or you accept and trust the fact that she's really researched this part and it's a very accurate portrayal, you know. And I do understand the problem because, you know, if you have Al Pacino playing blind, for example, people know what a blind person is, and I'm not saying there's no subtleties or complexities to that, but you kind of know what that is. But autism is a spectrum, and I just happen to know that her performance is extremely accurate and sensitive to that, and is based on a real character, and I think some of the press haven't really given her credit.
Sure.
For
well, we spoke to Sigourney on the programme last month, and she explained some of this. Let's play you just a little bit of how Sigourney explained the film and explained her role in it.
Well, I play a woman named Linda, who's quite a character and sort of goes her own way, and among other things, she has autism, and so she's quite strict about you know, what she needs and what she likes. And actually, I had worked with Alan Rickman long ago in Galaxy Quest. Yeah. We'd had a wonderful time and sort of stayed in touch. And he sent me this script, and I just fell in love with it and wanted to work with him again. I met Mark, and he seemed like a wonderful person to direct this very charming and surprising story. And what I liked about it most was that it really wasn't about autism. It just is part of the fabric of the movie.
Sigourney Weaver speaking on this programme a few weeks ago. So I think, Mark, people will have heard that and kind of got the fact. I mean, I think we mentioned Rain Man in the course of the conversation.
Yeah.
That is almost what people think of, that they think of Dustin Hoffman. They think of that role. It was a fantastic role and he did it very well. But I think she was explaining, and I think most people got the fact that it's not all like that. It is, as you say, a spectrum.
Exactly. And, you know, I think Dustin Hoffman nailed it. And it's very interesting, actually, the comparison to Rain Man, which obviously kind of lurks in the shadows, because you look at Rain Man now, as we obviously did, and you think, yeah, this is a film with an autistic character in it, a particular kind of autistic character, a savant, I suppose you'd call him. But it's also a film that's just as much as about 80s greed, in a way, and about Tom Cruise's character. And sort of, I think the comparison is a valid one to Snowcake, because it's equally about Alan Rickman's character. And maybe you could look at the film and go, maybe this is more reflective of how we are now, you know?
So is it? It's clearly not that really about snow. So if it's not really about autism, what is it about?
Well, I think the snow is sort of a nice detail because it was inspired, obviously, by the experience of autism that Angela Pell has, the writer of her autistic son. But very smartly, she kind of she saw how much joy her son Johnny had from eating snow, yeah. And that was sort of something that she worked into the script and contemplated and was an inspiration for the film. But I guess really it's about lost characters, you know, and in particular Alan Rickman, who just does, I think, a wonderful job of being Alan Rickman, this lost Englishman in an alien landscape, who meets this character he really doesn't know what to do with, because partly because he's autistic and partly because he's that character, and it's about characters, really, and situations, you know.
I'd like to say this, but I mean, I find myself in a very strange position here because I never thought that we'd be having this conversation on the back end of bad reviews. I mean, I saw Snowcake, as everyone knows. I'm a great admirer of Mark Evans anyway. I think he's a terrific director. And funnily enough, when Mark first told me about this film, I said, exactly, what's it about? Because it's called Snowcake. He said, oh, that's interesting. What's it about? He said, well, it's about a cake of snow, actually. And that is pretty much as far as it went in terms of descriptions. It's very much a character piece. It does centre on Alan Rickman's character, who is somebody who has this dark secret in his past. A tragedy happens at the beginning that brings these three characters together, the third one being Carrie Ann Moss. And I understand what Mark is saying about the reticence that some people have. There is a knee-jerk reaction to Hollywood stars playing, you know, characters with disabilities. In fact, there is a joke in the movie in which one character says, oh, autism, yeah, I know all about that. I saw that film. They don't even have to invoke the name of Rain Man. It is there in the background anyway. I really liked it. I think that one of the reasons it doesn't fall into the traps that perhaps these other reviews are accusing it of, and for the record, I haven't read these reviews, I don't know what they've said, is that I think Mark has a very specific touch with his direction. He has an indie, offbeat sort of, I mean, I hate this phrase, but that kind of left-field vision, which always prevents what he does dripping over into the mainstream. You look at a film like My Little Lie, which is a terrific horror movie, which incidentally, I would remind you, everyone hated when they first saw it. I mean, Mark will remember this very well. The first time that film was ever seen in America, the distributors didn't actually want to release the wretched thing. And of course, it turned out to be a huge hit. It's the same with Trauma, that Trauma is one of those movies that needed to find its audience. I think Snowcake has a much more mainstream appeal than that, actually. I think Alan Rickman's terrific. I think it's in an interesting script. I think it does some very difficult, complicated turns, which it does in a way which is completely unabashed. But I think that the shame is that because it has star turns in it, sometimes people don't notice the director. I mean, again, I would say the star of the film for me is Mark. I mean, I do think he's very...
That's very nice of you, Mark.
No, but you know how I feel about this. I do think that there is a type of direction which understands the subtleties of material and can... I mean, this could have been handled really badly. It could have gone completely the other way, and perhaps that's what some other reviewers are thinking that they have seen. I mean, but it is that weird thing, isn't it? Two people can review the same movie, and it's like you're reviewing a different film. I laughed. I enjoyed it. There was one absolutely lovely moment in it when Alan Rickman says to the Sigourney Weaver character, he says, I'm leaving, but I have to say, you have been really annoying. And that's the sort of thing that you don't get in those other films. And it has a clear Mark Evans visual stamp on it. There is a real shock in the opening 10 minutes, which unfortunately I think it's too easy to reveal, so I'm not going to.
Sorry, I already revealed it. Was
Did you?
Siggy.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, it's a shame because it blindsided me because I specifically didn't read anything about it in advance because I didn't want to know anything about it. And of course it has a very interesting soundtrack. There's this lovely thing when we're having I'm Just Looking being played almost on a church organ at one point. And it's, Mark has done an awful lot of work with Welsh bands. He made a documentary about John Cale. He has a very intriguing pop sensibility, which I have always liked. And if the film was getting bad reviews from everybody else, Mark, hey, those people don't know nothing.
Well, thank you very much. It's a 50-50, actually, Mark.
So well, good. In that case, 50% of them know something.
Can I ask you how you managed to get Alan Rickman on board? Because I don't know how this process works, but clearly he's got to be impressed by something. How did you set about that?
Well, it was the script, really. I think Angela wrote that main part or the main male part for Alan.
And it's the first script that she's actually written.
Absolutely, yeah. And she said, I wrote this for Alan Rickman. And the great thing about British actors is and their sensibility is it's sort of easier to get a script to a British actor, even a great one like Alan. And not face that, wall of agencing and, what's the deal and how much is he getting paid. So we got the script to Alan fairly easily and he read it fairly quickly and liked it. And the conversation then we had with Alan was like, well, what do you think about the part of Linda? And it was him who suggested Sigourney, and the Galaxy Quest thing was kind of, we owe that film a big thank you, really, because on that film, obviously, they had such a laugh making it and also had this great sense of, that it was a heroic endeavour, one of those films that never got the attention. It's a cult movie, really, as you know, and it's like, I think they came out of that feeling that they had a great sense of solidarity with each other, which obviously paid off in terms of getting Sigourney involved in the film, and then also actually in working with them both on the film,
It's just, I mention it because he is one of those actors, and this is a well-worn path for a Friday afternoon, who people will go and see an Alan... if Alan Rickman's in it, in a leading role, a lot of people might go, yeah, if Rickman's in it, there's going to be something that I want to watch.
I think so, yeah. And he's, you know, he is... I just loved working with him, and I think he's really great at it. And in some ways, inevitably, you know, without taking anything away from Sigourney, the kind of the autistic part is the more technically difficult, showy part. But Alan is just, I think, he's the centre of the film. He's wonderful. I mean, it was very funny, actually, because we were shooting this film in Northern Ontario, you know, with no money and at some point no snow, with three actors who were acting ordinary people. But, of course, they, you know, the three of them are just great cult heroes. You've got Harry Potter, Alien and Matrix all standing around in the cold trying to be normal. It was amazing.
Do you get to see other movies, Mark?
I do, yeah, absolutely.
So how many of the current top 10 would you have seen, do you think?
The current top... Well, it's a bit of a tricky time because it's the summer, right? So
yes.
Normally more than that I probably would have done this week. Also, I've been slightly obsessing about mine and doing press and stuff, so I'm probably about 2 weeks out, actually.
Okay, well...
The last one I saw was Volver.
Okay, well, just before you go, what I want to do is just do the box office top 10, then we'll do the reviews after after 3:30. But while you're with us, Mark, see, what Mark does his sort of quick paragraph or six about each film. If you, you're in Cardiff, so you can't wave your arms around, but if you just, if you interject, and it's entirely up to you, if you've seen it, make it blooming obvious.
Okay.
Okay? But Mark in London goes first, and then Mark in Cardiff can chip in.
Okay. Mark with a K and Mark with a C.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so box office top 10 this week. At 10, Snakes on a Plane.
Well, you know, it's Snakes on a Plane. They wouldn't show it to critics. When you see it, it's not terrible. It's just slightly rubbish. And the interstitial bits which they put in to up the R rating are incredibly badly put in. And it's not a rotten movie. It's just not any good.
Silence from Cardiff.
Yeah.
the aforementioned Volver at 9.
Really liked it. I was completely stunned when it didn't win the Palme d'Or at Cannes. I mean, I really would have put my house on it doing that. I'm very glad to see that it seems to be doing well over here. And I think it's a real eye-opener in terms of Penelope Cruz. I have never seen her being that good before. In fact, in the past, I've been slightly dismissive of her, but this has really silenced me.
Mark C.
Eye-opener, Penelope Cruz. Couldn't put it better, absolutely. I mean, in all senses of the word, she's amazing in it.
Monster House at 7?
No. Crank at 8.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
It goes 10, 9, 7.
I knew I was...
I blame the failure of the education.
Holy Grail moment. 1, 2, 4.
Four, yes.
Okay, at 8, Crank.
Jason Statham is the speed bus. He must not slow down, otherwise he will die. For about 20 minutes, that's an entertaining premise. And then it does slow down, and then you sort of fall asleep. But there is 20 minutes of top-ranked Jason Statham stupidity, which outdoes anything in that hideous Guy Ritchie abomination Revolver.
Monster House at 7, but then you know that.
It's okay. It's quite good. I mean, actually, in comparison with many of this year's animated summer releases, it's one of the better ones. And it's certainly scarier than some of the films that are currently purporting to be horror films.
Mark, have you seen... This is Mark in Cardiff.
Yeah.
Have you seen Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest? It's just that we know...
Not the second one, no.
No, yeah.
Did you see the first one, Mark?
Yeah.
What did you think?
Yeah, good. Very good.
That's a relationship ender, isn't it? There we go.
See?
Actually, I was wrong. I hate My Little Eye. I never liked Trauma, and his new film stinks.
Cars is at 5.
You know, again, very good design. Sadly, not as much story and character as it needs, and certainly not up with the best of the Toy Story stuff. But as a 43-year-old man with a fetish for 50s pastel shades, I liked it.
The Sentinel at 4.
Let's see.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, Michael Douglas running is in itself something that's worth going to the cinema. I mean, it's nonsense. It's basically In the Line of Fire without any of the tension. Kim Basinger is quite funny as the president's wife, but the idea that Michael Douglas is protecting the president by strumping the first lady really doesn't hold much water.
Wicker Man at 3.
Awful, 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 awful. One of those things that absolutely proves that when the distributors don't show you the film, it's not because they want you, the fans, to decide first. It's because they know it's a turkey. And as I say, the greatest criticism of that movie, British Board of Film Classification gave it a 12A, even when the distributors said, please, can we have a 15? They said, no, because it's not
and
scary.
And if you think that's rough, Little Man at 2?
Well, you know, I mean, words don't fail me. The words that come to mind are exactly as I said. Like, if you go and see this film, you really should be ashamed of yourself. Of course, everyone who made it, there is no pit of hell deep enough into which to pour them. But if you fund them, if you encourage them, if you are one of the people that put this movie at Little Man, just look inside yourself. How do you sleep?
We came to the conclusion, Mark, that last week that Little Man is actually possessed by the devil.
Yes, so that is what I said.
So anyway, so anyway.
You know what? I would rather be Mark Kermode's friend than his enemy, I tell you what.
And at number one, You, Me and Dupree.
Which is sort of all right for the times that the Wilson boy is on screen and sort of not all right for the rest of it. And I must raise this. There is a quote on the poster from Johnny Vaughan which says, "Trust me, you'll laugh your socks off." And the key phrase in that Johnny Vaughan review is, "Trust me." No.
Okay. So that's the box office top 10, the new releases to come. I think you've got a bit of movie catching up to do, Mark Evans.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how many on that list, actually. I want to go and see.
Well, on the basis of the reviews, I can understand this. We wish Snowcake all the best. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thanks a lot. Thanks.
A couple of quick emails. Chris in Brighton. Dear Simon and the Doctor, I was wondering if the good Doctor might recommend some exciting and interesting but not utterly harrowing horror films for me to check out. You see, I'm interested in expanding my horror knowledge, but frankly, I'm a wimp and don't want to be left a quivering wreck. So nothing by Takashi Miike.
Miike,
please. For little context, I loved Ringu, enjoyed Wolf Creek. He doesn't sound like a wimp to me.
No, if you enjoyed Wolf Creek.
Enjoyed Wolf Creek, except for the bit where they push the car off the cliff and then immediately say, "Quick, we need a car." And thought Hostel was very silly indeed.
It
I was
is.
The only one in the cinema who laughed at the I pus bit. I was thinking perhaps The Devil's Backbone, the Guillermo del Toro ghost story, and maybe Switchblade Romance. Anyway, that is not a wimp.
No, it's not. Devil's Backbone is terrific. If you haven't seen it, definitely go and see it. It's fantastic. But here's the big tip. The best, I would say the best movie of the year, which is coming out in a couple of months, is the new film by Guillermo del Toro, which is called Pan's Labyrinth, which kind of revisits the territory of Devil's Backbone, Spanish Civil War, but it has a fantasy narrative. And I was absolutely knocked out by it. It's not a horror film, although it has some horrifying elements in it. And if you can wait for a couple of months, believe me, I would be astonished if you see a better film than that this year. Right. It is really something.
We spoke to him a couple of weeks ago while you were away.
Guillermo del Toro. Oh, because of the weekend of Fright Fest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's a lovely bloke, obviously.
Ray Jackson says, "Dr. Kermit, I feel it imperative to tell you that I may be the only other person on the planet who hated Pirates 2 as much as you. I foolishly went to see it before hearing your review, came out disgusted, jaded, and cursing the moment I handed over my £5. I also seem to remember giving my friend the kind of rant reminiscent of yours to the poor Mayo."
Good man.
"By the way, I have my first press screening on Tuesday. Ah. I'm so excited and would greatly appreciate any advice. Should I look smug and bring a notebook?"
No. The only advice I can give you is if you're going to a press screening and I'm there, don't sit in the seat on the aisle seat on the right-hand side because that's my seat. Okay. The aisle seat at the right-hand side of the front seat is my seat. And if you're new to press screenings and you sit in it, I will have words with you.
And also don't talk during the film.
Don't talk during the film. Don't have a lighty-up pen. That's the other thing.
Anyway, that's right. He's a director of film in training, he says.
Okay.
Anyway, so I think that'd be great. If you see Mark, Ray, go sit right next to him.
No, don't do that either.
Just to irritate him. Right, let's do some more reviews. Done Snowcake. What else should we look at?
Driving Lessons. Woefully misjudged British oddball comedy, which pairs Rupert Grint, he of Harry Potter fame, and Julie Walters, she of, well, actually, in passing, Harry Potter fame as well. You know, so...
And Educating Rita.
Educating Rita, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff. So the story, which is... it's written and directed by the guy who wrote Mrs. Brown, who I have to say is clearly more able behind a typewriter than he is behind a camera. The story is Rupert Grint, who I think is a very fine actor. I like Thunderpants a lot, and I think of all the Harry Potter actors, he's the young one who's, you know, who's making the most headway. Apparently, Jeremy Brock had an experience when he went to work for Dame Peggy Ashcroft. This is kind of inspired by that. The story is Rupert Grint goes to work for Julie Walters, who is a retired, well, sort of semi-retired actress of, you know, Dame-ish disposition. Now, the thing it's trying to evoke, I think to some extent, is probably Harold and Maude, which is an absolutely lovely film, one of the, you know, the loveliest of cult movies, a terrific, you know, story about a young man having a relationship with an older woman. And there's kind of hints of that to some extent, but they have these adventures together during which Rupert Grint discovers all about life and love. They go to Edinburgh. Rupert Grint discovers about girls. Meanwhile, she discovers his friendship a newfound confidence, and they all discover the strength to overthrow virtually Rupert's horrible Church of England family, who are ruled over by an incredibly unconvincing vicar, a parish of completely unconvincing parishioners, and his mum, played by Laura Linney, who's usually very good, struggling like mad with an English accent and a part which causes her to do extremely unbelievable things in leafy North London suburbs. There is a quote on the poster, and I was so cross about this, I kind of looked it up. On the poster, it says, "Comedy Gold Empire." And having seen the film and laughed a couple of times, there were two laughs in it. One laugh, which is a nice line delivered by one sanctimonious churchgoer who says, "The reason it's every day is a gift, that's why we call it the present." And that I laughed at, because that could probably find its way into a superior comedy. The rest of it, however, had none of the touch of Richard Curtis, which it desperately wants to have. You know, when Richard Curtis starts making gags about Middle England and Seavey and all that kind of, he knows what he's striking at, and he does it beautifully and affectionately and incisively and sarcastic, all those things at the same time. This doesn't have any of that. But I looked up this comedy, it said Comedy Gold Empire. I thought, that has to be taken out of context. That cannot be what the sentence said. And here is the sentence from which that Comedy Gold Empire comes. "If all else fails, get old people to swear. The odd F word in the mouth of a pensioner is always good for a giggle. Up the stakes to the dreaded C word uttered by an actress who is a national treasure, and you may well have struck comedy gold. At least that's what writer-director Jeremy Brock is hoping for." Now, I think you can realise from the context of that, they didn't say it's comedy gold.
You should be able to take action about stuff like that, because clearly that's misdirected. Well, that's misleading the public.
I would say it is. And there's also another quote from the Daily Telegraph, this year's Calendar Girls. And again, I looked at today's Telegraph review specifically for this, and it said, "The casting of Julie Walters in a central role suggests that it's going to be a small, almost made for afternoon TV movie such as Calendar Girls," which again is not quite the same thing. The funny thing about it is this. Jeremy Brock is clearly a good writer. Mrs. Brown was very well written, had some terrific dialogue. You remember all that stuff about it is whom. I mean, lovely, you know, lines. None of that seems to be evident here. Rupert Grint is a perfectly fine young actor, and I think will grow into an accomplished comic performer. And Julie Walters is just Julie Walters. In fact, you could take the whole of the rest of the movie out and just have Julie Walters doing the mad batty dame wandering around in a large house being kooky and eccentric and swearing, and you'd have all the stuff that was worthwhile in the film. What you don't have is any sense of coherence, any sense of direction, any sense of why on earth we should be interested in these characters. And the other thing you don't have is you don't have a lot of laughs. And I kept being reminded of those Sky funded or, you know, ITV funded or, you know, essentially made for television, middle of the afternoon dramas, exactly, I think, as the Telegraph review was saying, and thinking, but you know, those generally got more laughs in them.
Interesting, I mean, you mentioned the Telegraph reviewer, who is Sukhdev Sandhu. I don't know if you know it, but he makes, I haven't seen the film, but he says this: "It's only a pity that Christianity, unless in the mild-mannered form practiced by Ben's father, is shown as being hypocritical and self-serving. I've said it before, I'll say it again. When will British cinema start treating the Church of England with the respect it accords to other religions?"
Well, that's an interesting point. Comment. I mean, actually, the main criticism of what this does with the Vicar's family is that it's just not funny. I mean, I think you can do anything. I mean, I don't believe in blasphemy. I think people can lampoon any religion they want to. But the thing you have to do is you have to be funny about it. The amazing thing about this is it throws barbs at this kind of, you know, mock C of E family. And none of it rings true. None of the things that it's laughing at have any kind of recognisable facet. It's just a bunch of slightly cheap gags that seem to have been displayed. And Laura Linney is the wrong actress for that role. I'm sorry, she's a very fine actress, but it's completely the wrong role for the Vicar's wife. And if you're going to laugh at those things, you have to laugh at them in a way which makes other people laugh as well. And this is the failure here is not enough laughs, not enough jokes.
It's not comedy gold. 13 minutes.
Actually, put that on the poster. Not comedy gold.
What you could do, I mean, actually, you probably shouldn't, because you'll get done for defacing, probably, but you could just go in and just write on the poster, not. And then that would be quite a more accurate assessment of, in fact, what the magazine said. John in Tottenham, "Tell Dr. Kurtmode, each day is a gift, that's why it's called the present, is a stock phrase to be found in any book he might care to choose from the self-help section of Waterstones."
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's not an original line. I'm just saying it's worthy of being somewhere else. I mean, I didn't imagine it had been made up completely, you know, by that. But it's still funny when it's delivered. But yes, thank you for that. I just realized, actually, what I said was staggeringly ungracious. No, you're quite right. I did, as I was saying it, attribute it to the writer, and you're quite right. I was mistaken and wrong, and I apologise.
Thank you.
Carry on.
Miles on this is, if you do, if anyone does want to watch a funny driving episode, I'm having my lesson around the Ealing Common area tomorrow at 9. A 32-year-old trying to drive. It should be hilarious.
Oh, good.
Might be funnier than the film. Kevin says, I was wondering, Kevin Smith, actually, I suspect it's not.
Not that Kevin Smith.
I was wondering if you saw the new Bond trailer today, what you thought of the bigger, badder, blonder Bond.
Didn't
also,
see
does
it.
Mark know if we're going to be treated to a proper DVD version of Blade Runner?
Oh, well, the
featuring his fab documentary.
The Blade Runner thing is ongoing, and there's no short answer to it. Other than yes, but ... It is happening, but it's tied up in contractual problems. I haven't seen the new trailer, but I really like Daniel Craig. I think he's a very good actor, and I don't mind the blonde business at all.
So driving lessons, okay. What else?
Well, Little Miss Sunshine again comes bearing huge quotes on the poster: hilarious, hysterically funny, plain fabulous, one of the best films of the year. It is a very acclaimed independent comedy. Apparently, took him 5 years to make, and then was picked up at the Sundance Film Festival, as so many indie things are. Picked up by Fox for apparently $10 million, which means, immediately it's made all its money back. A dysfunctional family are forced to go on the road in order to attend the Little Miss Sunshine competition in California. Little Miss Sunshine competition being one of these young persons pageants, of which have been in the news, recently associated with, murder cases and things. And there is a real dark underbelly to those things, which is sort of touched upon here, but not really delved into. The family consists of the Moppet daughter, obviously, mad grandfather played by Alan Arkin, failed self-help therapist dad, who is presumably the kind of man who would indeed say, we call it every day is a gift, that's why we call it the present, thank
Good
you very
saying,
much
very wise.
Thank you. Suicidal uncle and a mute son who refuses to speak. I like Greg Kinnear a lot, and Greg Kinnear does that sort of droll American bore rather well, and there are individually good things about it. Alan Arkin is very good as the porno loving drunk heroin addicted grandfather, because how could he not be? It's such a great comedy role. The problem with it is that it doesn't, it's nothing like as harsh as it needs to be about the subject, because there are some really dark things going on in that whole beauty pageant mythology, and it never quite gets towards them. The other thing is, it's very contrived. All these people have to get into a camper van and travel across country for reasons which are never properly explained. And at its best, it's a strange little quirky widget of a movie. At its worst, it's basically RV for the indie crowd, which is nothing that you really want to pay to go and see. Toni Collette's good as the mum. It very quickly runs out of dramatic steam. They realise that they've exhausted all the possibilities of these people being stuck together in a car, so they start doing over-the-top things, like they have to dispose of dead bodies, like they have to do a little motorcycle chase, like they get stopped by the police. I mean, they keep cranking up the dramatic ante because you feel that they have run out of things to do with their subject matter. I think there is a much darker, much more vicious, much more spiteful movie to be made about this subject.
And that would be a good thing.
That would be a good thing, yeah.
Okay.
And this isn't it. That's not to say it's not without laughs. There are laughs in it. And certainly, if you compare it to Driving Lessons, it is a really rip-roaring, insightful, blisteringly funny laugh-out-loud comedy. But please don't quote that out of context on the poster, unless you use the phrase, if you compare it to the not-comedy gold Driving Lessons, in which case, you have my permission. Also out this week, right at your door, the absolutely electrifying star of which we had on the programme last week. You remember?
Yes, I remember that. He needed to go and have a very, very, very long sleep.
It was funny because Rory Cochran, in the movie, is quite agitated. Here in the flesh, he was fairly
the opposite. What's
fairly
the opposite
laid back
of agitated?
Not agitated. I think it's probably the opposite of agitated. So the story is, it's a small-scale apocalyptic thriller in which, at the beginning of it, a dirty bomb goes off in Los Angeles. Rory Cochran is in the house. His wife is outside. She comes back. He's taped up the house. He won't let her in. Now, he was saying last week that, it's not about terrorism. It's not about the apocalypse. It's not about any of those things. It's a relationship movie. It's about what would you do with your relationship? Well, fine to some extent. However, you release a movie like this close to September the 11th, this close to the 5th anniversary, obviously in the run-up to World Trade Center coming out, there's an awful lot of stuff about 9/11 on the television and the news at the moment. One cannot help but see it as slightly opportunist to release this in that climate. So there's no point saying it's not about those things. Of course it is. It may not be primarily about them, but it is about them, nonetheless. As far as the drama with the two people is concerned, would you let your partner back in knowing that they had been contaminated?
You would, I think. That's what I was trying to... I mean, I haven't seen the film,
but
I'm just not sure I take the basic premise that if you are, as he said, desperately in love, newly married, your partner turns up, infected.
You don't even know they're infected. You know that the bomb's gone off and they may be infected.
Right.
You open the door.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Either you go out or she comes in.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. So half of my problem is that you spend the movie going, open the door. Open the door. Stop having the conversation and open the door. And if you don't open the door, you're a scoundrel and a scumbag, and I don't care. The other problem is that the central moral dilemma, which is being sort of, you know, whittled away at here in very art house fashion, is actually the same central moral dilemma that's in all zombie movies. And, of course, is at the centre of Shaun of the Dead. Remember that lovely line in Shaun of the Dead where he says, I don't think I can face killing my best friend and my mum in the same day. And the whole gag is about the fact that these people are no longer these people. They've become something else because they've been infected. But Shaun of the Dead's rip-roaringly funny, and it's entertaining, and it romps along. It has no pretensions, but it has the ability to do moments of drama that really are touching and affecting. The problem with this is that is the whole act. The whole act is suffering, 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 big moral dilemma. And as he was saying himself, he said one of the reasons he was wiped out was that it had been a very intense shoot. I'm sure it was a very intense shoot. It's a fairly intense watch. But after about 15 minutes, you just think, open the door and be done with it, because I'm kind of losing patience with all of you. And so it's nothing like as profound or insightful as it thinks. That's not to say that for the minute budget that they had and for the small scale palette of the film, it doesn't do something very ambitious.
It's like that poster for the Robert Redford movie, Would You Sleep With This Man For $1 million? Overwhelmingly, it was said, yes,
yes,
next question.
I would, yes. And I'm answering that, I would as well.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes, you would.
You'd sleep with Robert Redford
for $1 million?
You never would do that.
Well, the question is, the Richard Gere factor, really.
I think this seems a good point to leave it. Movie of the week?
Well...
There is. You can say there isn't.
No, a movie of the week for me is Snowcake.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.